हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 43, Sutra 127. Arbhakau kashtvat tad vyaparesas cha netichen na nichayatvad evam vyomavach cha. Arbhaka, small. Okashtvat, because of the residence. Tat, of that. Vyaparesat, because of the teaching. Cha, and, na, not, iti, thus. Chet, if, na, not. Nichayatvat, because of meditation. Evam, in this way. Vyomavat, like the sky. Cha, also. If one argues that manomaya cannot refer to the Lord because the manomaya purusha is stated to dwell in a small place and be very small, the answer is no, because that description is given for meditation, and the Lord is also described in the same passage as being larger than the sky. Sutra Prakashika. In the Chandogya Upanishad section, which is the subject of the Adhikarna, there appears a line which says, "In my heart is the self, smaller than a grain of rice or barley." The interlocutor in this passage insists that, because it is very tiny, the manomaya must be the jiva and cannot be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The sutra analyzes the flawed logic behind this objection. The Lord can manifest at any size. He is unlimitedly powerful and not subject to our man-made constraints. Sri Govinda Vashya. Purva Paksha. So this is their
reason for
their
doubt.
Esha ma atmantar hridaye niyan briher va yavad va. This atma, smaller than a grain of rice or barley, resides in my heart. Chandogya Upanishad 3.14.3. The Shruti text shows that the manomaya refers to the jiva, not the Lord, since it describes the manomaya as inhabiting a small place, the heart, and being minuscule in size, which can apply only to the jiva, not to the Lord. Siddhanta. This is refuted in the next sutra. Arabhakau shatvat yad vapade shach chaneti chen na nichayadvat evam vyomavach cha. If it be said that the word manomaya cannot refer to the Brahman, because here it is said that the residence of the manomaya is very tiny, then I say no, because Brahman should be meditated on in this way, and because in the same passage the manomaya is said to be as great as the sky. One cannot say that manomaya does not refer to the Lord because the Lord is described as inhabiting a small place and being small in size, since in the same text the Lord is described as being huge and by comparing him to the sky. Jayan Prithivi Jayan Antarikshat. The Lord is greater than the earth and greater than the sky. How can the contrary statements, being small and huge, be reconciled? By the understanding that the Lord is described as small only because he is to be worshipped, Nichayatvat, in the heart. The point is this. Sometimes the Lord is described as small in a figurative way, and sometimes because it is actual. The Lord is figuratively described as small for the convenience of the devotee who remembers him within the heart, which is small. He actually becomes small out of mercy to his devotees by applying his inconceivable energy. The one form of the Lord appears variously to the devotees. Eko pisan bahuda yo vabhati. One Lord appears as many. Gopal Tapati Upanishad. Though the Lord is large, he becomes small by the Achintya Shakti. This topic is also described in Vaishvanaradhikarana, Brahma Sutra 1.2.25. The small size Lord is also described as huge because he has the power to appear simultaneously everywhere. So it's by his kindness that he comes small like that, because then sitting in the heart, we can meditate upon it. If we think he's there with us, then we'll tend to meditate. If we think he's somewhere else, then we'll tend to not meditate. Right? We'll think of ourselves. Right? So, makes sense. And the only reason he's small is because our heart is small. That's not necessarily a good thing. Yes?
It describes in the Bhagavatam that he's a little bit bigger, super small.
No, because he's within the jiva, and he's also as the super soul. That's why he says he's smaller than the smallest, because we're the smallest.
Yeah.
And he's smaller than that. And he's also bigger, the size of a thumb.
So we're not the most anything.
Yeah, that's the point. We're not the most anything.
You can't even get that.
You can't even get it. We're the smallest. Come on, you know. Yeah.
Toss me a bowl.
Yeah, something. Something. Yeah. Okay.
Let me be special.
Yeah. So they're just, again, you know, as you see further, just clutching at straws. Now they're getting that. Okay, well, the size, if he's so small. But the next verse, it says, no, he's bigger than the earth, bigger than the sky. So, but why do they miss that? Because they want to miss that. Right? You know, it's kind of like after you clean your room and do your homework and go out and play. Oh, I can play.
Yeah.
Yeah, somehow or another, that seems to be how the materialistic mind works, right? Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. The Supreme Lord, not the jiva, is to be meditated upon within the heart as the most subtle or as the smallest. Because otherwise, then here's what's the other point. Why would they have, now it's revealed, why would they have that motive? Right? Because if they're saying in the heart is the jiva, because what's in the heart, you're supposed, you know, he who is smaller than this and who is living, you know, that size is to be meditated upon. So then what would they meditate upon? Themselves. Right? You can see it always goes back to this false ego, that they're the worshipable one, they're the greatest, they're just everything. I would say cat's meow, but the cat's meow around here is not that great. So. When the cat starts meowing, you know, okay, there's trouble, okay. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam 8.6.8. Lord Brahma said, although you are never born, your appearance and disappearance as an incarnation never cease. You are always free from the material qualities, and you are the shelter of transcendental bliss, resembling an ocean. Eternally existing in your transcendental form, you are the supreme subtle of the most extremely subtle. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto you, the supreme whose existence is inconceivable. Right? So you are the supreme subtle of the most extremely subtle. Right? So we're the most extremely subtle, but he's even more subtle than that. 44. That's it. Okay, so that's clear. So it appears that this size thing is going to be discussed more in this verse. What? That was 128. It said it was going to be discussed in the next verse.
Yeah.
Oh, no, in the previous verse, 125. So it was already discussed. Okay, that's also in the previous one.
This is the second part.
Oh, 25. Okay, yeah. No, I just got...
Different adhikaran.
Yeah, okay. So we're just sticking to Manomaya at this point. Sutra 1.2.8. Sambhoga praptir iti chen na vaisheshata. Sambhoga of enjoyment, praptir, attainment, iti, thus, chait, if, na, not, vaisheshyat, because of the difference. If one objects that the Lord will share the experience of the jiva if he resides in the body, the answer is no, because the relationship of the Lord with the body is different. Sutra Prakashika. In the concluding sutra of this Adhikarana, the objector raises a final doubt. In the preceding sutra is concluded that the all-pervading Manomaya person resides within the heart, right? So they're saying, no, it can't be, it has to be the jiva, and then when you show, no, it is the Lord, but then there's, you know, then there's the next, it just keeps coming up, right? In other words, they're not accepting as him, so it doesn't apply, but then when you show that it does apply, then they'll come up with their next doubt. So that's just how doubts work. The objector refuses to concede the point on the grounds that this would then subject the Lord to the same pain and sufferings as the embodied soul, right? Because their idea is that they're the supreme, and then on that platform they won't suffer. So now if the supreme, as Brahman, is not suffering, why would Brahman being in the heart then suffer? Right? Does that make sense? You know, but, you know, they're just trying. You know? This is a misconception, responds Srila Vyasadeva, owing to the difference of nature between Brahman and Jiva. Paramatma does not share in the Jiva's material pleasure and pain, but merely bears witness to it. Mere contact to a certain body does not by itself bring suffering and enjoyment. Being under the dominion of karma is the real cause. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not under the power of the law of karma, and therefore is dwelling in the heart as a transcendental observer is perfectly reasonable. The cat's
yes,
behalf.
Exactly.
Sri Govinda Bhashya, Purva Paksha. Quote, the Lord Duta residing within the body like the jiva will establish a relationship with it, and thus will experience its suffering in the same manner. No. Okay, so this is the main cat.
Not at all.
Look, because if you go like this, it thinks that's where you're supposed to come.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Mistake.
Yeah. Well, you just... looking for a comfortable place.
No.
Okay.
I'm allergic for cats.
You're allergic for cats. Oh, okay. Here, come sit here. Here. Be happy there. Okay. The word. Okay. No, not up there. That's the book. Okay. Okay. Siddhanta, this is refuted in the next sutra. Samboga praptir iti chen na vaisheshat. If it is said that the Paramatma in the heart also experiences the pains and pleasures of the material body, then I say no, because there's a great difference between him and the jiva. The word sam and samboga means along with, as in the word samvada, discussion with another person. The Lord does not enjoy or suffer along with the jiva, samboga praptihi. Why? Because of difference. The meaning is this: relationship with the body is not the cause of enjoying and suffering in the body. Being under the control of karma is the real cause, right? Because otherwise, then, if it was just the body, how would the Mayavadi ever come to the transcendental platform when he's within the body? Because they will consider they come to that platform. Right? Because if by being in the body only is the cause of the suffering, then that their philosophy wouldn't apply. Right? It's because of karma. So the jiva's there because he's involved in karma, that's why he suffers. And if the Supreme Lord is there because he's not involved in karma, he doesn't suffer. Just like they themselves, if they come to the transcendental position, they won't be suffering. Right? So it doesn't make sense here. They're just trying to make the point that they're the Manomaya Purush. They're the one in the heart that's supposed to be worshipped. They're the, you know, because if Indra is the one to be worshipped, that means they, as the jiva, are the one to be worshipped. Right? Yes.
Is that correct in saying that, in essence, if we're doing this, like for example, in an argument, we say no about this, and try and somewhere to figure out a way to establish a point. Essentially, it's my way of philosophy.
Well, you could say. But at this, because, I mean, there is the aspect we're not considering the Lord, but it just means it's not God conscious, you know, like that. Because what we're doing is leaving the Lord out. So in that way you could say it's atheistic, and in that way it's then it has that impersonal aspect. But it's not necessarily specifically Mayavad technically. It just means we're not accepting the supremacy of the Lord. Like you'll see as we go, it seems to be this whole first section is all about the Mayavad philosophy. Because then, in other words, detractors within Vedanta you're trying to adjust. Then after that, then they'll deal with all the other schools. Right? So, in other words, the one Prabhupada says the six schools of Vedic philosophy, meaning the ones that are bogus, that means Shankara as the sixth. So once that's taken care of, then taken care of, Jaimini will be, you know, and then taken care of. I mean, Jaimini was actually the beginning. So Jaimini and then Shankara. So the other four are quite easy. You know, and then there'll be some other points like that, smaller points than what is here. So, yeah. The Lord is not under the control of karma, since it is said, anasananyo bichakshiti. One bird eats the fruit and the other does not. Mundaka Upanishad 3.1.1. Smriti also says, namam karmani limpanti, name karma phale spriha. I am not touched by karma, and I have no desire for the results of karma. Bhagavad Gita 4.14. Right, so Mayavadis do accept Gita because Shankara did. Otherwise, you do have those who don't accept any smriti. It has to be Veda. So it's already been established on Veda, but then to throw it in, then we throw in the smriti also. Because he gave the example already in Upanishads, in the Shruti, but now he's backing it up with this, and that will work for the Mayavadis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes?
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that demons are falling self in their austerities and they torture the body and the super soul.
That's a slightly different. Torture the super soul, because you're not doing what you're supposed to do. You're doing unnecessary austerities and stuff like that.
Annoyed or bothered.
Yeah, you know, like, how you say, being a natural food freak or something. You know, it annoys super soul because you're not eating properly. Yes. Yes.
It is said that super soul, he doesn't experience pain and pleasures.
Yes.
In the body.
Yes, not but from the body, but maybe from the activities of the super, of the soul, that may...
The experience is there.
That's something different. That's something different. That's between his relationship between him and the living entity. It has nothing to do with the body.
Of course. I mean, I'm just talking about the experience, because what we experience here, it's our experience. Even
yes.
if we watch a movie, we experience something, even though it has nothing to do with us.
Yes, yes. Because no, but that's the thing is because whatever we deal with, we become attached to. Because if you're, it's just like, let's say, let's say you have this movie, okay? And there's a good guy and a bad guy, okay? And there's two friends watching the movie. Now, what happens when one of the friends identifies with the good guy and one of the friends identifies with the bad guy? You understand? So the experience will be different. So it's not about that. He has experienced a relationship with the soul. But basically speaking, is they're just going on in karma, then it's there. You follow good karma, then at least they're following the laws, so then you know it'll go as good as possible. But when you don't follow the laws, then that's more disturbing. That's why it gives a bad reaction, because it's disturbing to the super soul. Right? When you don't follow his laws, then that's a disturbance. Why? Not because he's in control and you're not following his laws, so it annoys him that he's not the supreme controller because you're acting outside of his jurisdiction. It's because by his laws are given so that the living entity may be the most prosperous. You know, let's say like you have a very wealthy man and his son wants to be independent and go off and do his own thing. It means we see it's not an uncommon thing that the father is making all kinds of arrangements. Right? You know, he arranges that he's looking for a flat, so he arranges his people to contact him, but they don't know it, and then he gets a flat for cheap, and it's a really good place, and You know what I'm saying? In other words, he's taking care. So Krishna is taking care of the living entities in the material world by giving the Vedic literature. Because if you follow it, then one will be the most prosperous that you can be in the material world. You know, how prosperous can you be when things are temporary? Right? The spiritual world, Nanda Baba, you know, lives in Nanda Bhavan eternally. It's not going away. It's not going to fall apart. It's not going to be rezoned or something, or it's not going to be that the, you know, the daityas or something move in next door, and then the, you know, the how you say, the rents in the neighborhood plummet, or, you know, stuff like that. You know, so it's not going to be like that. You know, they're not going to want to build a highway, and his house happens to be, you know, right where they want to put it, or none of that's going to happen. So in the material world, you can only be so prosperous because of the temporariness, but at least you can be as prosperous as possible. That's what the Vedic literature is for. Right? We're looking at ignoring those and going to, oh, but the West will be prosperous. But in what way is the West prosperous? You know what I'm saying? Like I was looking at the other day, you know, it's like some of these high-end scarves, right? How much they cost? Ridiculous amount of money, right? Hundreds and hundreds of, you know, like that. And I was looking at, and they're made out of modal. Right? Modal sounds great, doesn't it? It's just synthetic. It's just a fancy form of, you know, nylon and all that. It's just another form of it. You know, you have all these different varieties of synthetic. It's just the highest class form of synthetic. So it's not even a real silk scarf. But they cost the same. You know, so they're not even getting anything nice. So that's the whole problem is that they're just wasting their time. So Krishna's point, no, everything's got to be in this way. It's got to be according to laws. It's got to be all these things. So therefore, it's the best that it is. So anything that the West is taking as an ideal, even the idea of natural, organic, all these different things, that is what it's supposed to be. You know, have nice big, you know, the yoga studio, are they little cramped places? No, they have to be very big. Lots of windows, lots of... But if you look at the descriptions of the Vedic places, it's always like that. You know what I'm saying? So Krishna's already giving that. And so if you follow that, then he'll be, you know, pleased. In the way of, at least you'll get the material piety. Now, if you do that without attachment, then you'll get liberation. And if you do that with bhakti, then you'll get him. But when you don't follow that and give that up and go down to lower levels of consciousness, then that won't be pleasing. So therefore, that's why we get bad results. So it appears that they're getting, but it's not from the work that they're doing now that they're getting the results. If they're getting money and it doesn't seem to make sense how, that's because last life they did follow the rules. But they weren't theistic enough to maintain, a life that would afford them to follow it in this life. So they're getting the results from last life, but because this life, they're wasting it, therefore it's just a matter of time before it runs out. So we'll say, oh no, he's doing great, but then why is it he's doing all those things and suddenly goes bankrupt? He's not doing anything different. So all it was is that his karma from previous ran out. Right? And other people are doing all this nonsense, but they're getting money. How is that? Because they did all the good things before, and it's still coming. But because they're doing bad now, at some point when the good runs out, then all they'll have is bad. Is that what I'm saying? So he doesn't suffer because of the body, that's the point. He suffers because the living entity doesn't behave properly. But at the same time is, he, unlike us, is able to be just an observer. Because he can give that freedom to the living entity and it doesn't in any way detract from his supreme authority and independence. Like for us, if someone doesn't follow, then it looks bad for us. But for him, it doesn't. He's still anyway, because we're still under his laws. But he just gives us that opportunity. Yes.
There's an injunction in the Hari Bhakti Vilas about if you leave the old flower garlands on.
If you leave the old flower garlands on.
Yeah.
then the Lord feels like he's being poked by knives, like sharp knives and stuff. So is that the same thing, like the relationship? It's because the relationship.
That is because what are we with the deity, then you're working, see, what we're discussing there is Paramatma. Right? So he's aloof from this whole thing. Now, as Bhagavan, he's aloof from the material, but he acts on the platform interacting with the devotees. So even though he's completely independent, he acts in such a way as if he's dependent.
Oh, yeah. So when he's hungry, when you don't feed him, he gets hungry.
And yeah, like that. Because he doesn't have to do that.
Yeah.
As Atmarama, he doesn't do that. But it, you know, in his form as the Lord, then he come. I mean, as Bhagavan, then that's for interaction with the devotees. So that's why the relationships. So the point is, old flowers get dry and they get pokey,
okay.
Right? And his. It's said that you can take a flower petal and just touch the skin, and it will leave a mark. You know, for us, if you push really hard, you get a different color. Him just touching with the flower petal, it will get. So then, yeah. So then, if you leave on old flower garland, that means you're not supposed to. That's the whole point. Is don't leave on flower garlands. Don't sit there and worry about how pokey. Well, these flowers aren't as pokey. Well, these ones that the tips of the petals are round, so they'll be less pokey. So we can leave it for an extra day. No, you don't do that. It's just that he likes, in other words, fresh garlands every day. So the idea is that if you don't take up this like this, when do we expect to see flower garlands, right? Mangal Artik, we don't expect to see them, but at Darshan Artik, we do.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what happens if the flower garlands are on at Mangal Artik, right? No, I'm just saying if they're old.
Okay.
That it's not that much of a step for us to put them back on.
Yeah.
You know, keep them for the Darshan. Right? But now if we take them off before, you know, the night before, then they're going to be moved. You know, we're not going to just keep them there nicely. Because otherwise you can take it off, put it, dress, put it back on. But then you put it away, so it's not going to happen. Because otherwise people will think like that. But if there's no garlands, then, oh, we have to get more garlands. So it's just a way. In other words, it should be the natural thing. You just want Krishna to have new garlands. But there's also the mentality of, you know, where we get lazy and then, you know, how to avoid that. Therefore, the rules are the way they are. Means the rule is, you know, according to what, you know, Mother Jashoda and the others would do.
Yeah.
Because in Vaikuntha, anytime he changes situation, they change the garlands. Right? We have him, he's wearing one garland through different situations. There, we receive him, come and sit, we offer garlands, sandal, everything like that. And then when that worship is finished with Maruparka, then when he goes to the next, he take everything off and distribute it and then put new stuff for that one. Then when he finishes the bath and all that, then you take all those off, and then on Alankarasan, then that everything again is new. Then he goes to Bojasan, again the same thing. Then he goes back to Mount, again the same thing. You know, so that's, you know, more extreme. That's you know, majesty. So it's constant. So, you know, in one puja, he'll be wearing five different garlands. You know, while for us, it's very simple. We do the puja, and when it's finished, we'll put on the garland.
Do Sris do that?
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's what we were pointing out, is that their worship is actually simpler than ours.
Yeah.
Just they repeat constantly.
Yeah.
That's what makes it appear that it's very complicated. But actually, technically, their worship is way simpler than ours. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because, yeah. Like that. They have the same puja, whether it's at home or in the temple. The only difference is at the home you can't offer all those things, so you'll just do those garlands by water. But in the temple, then you'll have it. But otherwise, it's the same simple puja. Well, for us, we'll have the temple worship, which is very loud, and then we'll have a simplified form for the house. Yeah. So, okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. Though the Supreme Lord and the Jiva and the heart are inseparable, the Supreme Lord is always transcendental to the mundane experiences of the Jiva. Right? So that's it. So it's only when it's the connection of the Jiva with the Lord's laws or with renunciation or with that then there'll be some. But in these others, is that it's not pleasing to him that it's done, so therefore they get a bad reaction, or it's pleasing to him, they get a good reaction. But it's not that it emotionally bothers them. It's only when you get to the level of Bhagavan, then the emotions of the Lord get involved. So, yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.5.10, or 11.5.10. The personality of Godhead is eternally situated within the heart of every embodied being. Still, the Lord remains situated apart, just as the sky, which is all-pervading, does not mix with any material object. Thus, the Lord is the supreme worshipable object and absolute controller, and the absolute controller of everything. He is elaborately glorified in the Vedic literature, but those who are bereft of intelligence do not like to hear about him. They prefer to waste their time discussing their own mental concoctions, which inevitably deal with gross material sense gratification, such as sex life and meat eating. Yeah, so it's pretty standard, right? That was Bhagavatam, 11th canto. Yeah. So it's always been like that. Adhikarana 2, the eater.
Yes.
He says no. Okay. Atat dikaranam. Atat. Atadi. Karanam. So atta adi. So it means atta adi means atta's flower, and then so eating of flower and all such things that follow. Okay. Adhikarana 2 seeks to identify who is the quote unquote eater mentioned in the Katha Upanishad 1.2.25. In keeping with the preceding Adhikarnas, the word in question denotes Brahman, who not only creates but also destroys, eats the cosmic manifestation. Oh, it's kind of like Pac-Man. Summary of Adhikarana 1. Vishaya. The Katha Upanishad 1.2.25 says, there's a person for whom the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas are food, and death is the sauce. Okay. Who knows where this person is?
This Katha Upanishad.
Yes. Well, they like to use unique ways of looking at things. You know, it kind of wakes you up. Oh, okay.
I mean, if Vaishnavas and Shudras are not mentioned, it means he doesn't eat them?
Maybe someone else eats them. You know.
Who is eating? I missed it.
Brahman. Because everything comes from Brahman, everything's destroyed, goes back to Brahman.
Oh,
like so in that way, going back into Brahman, then that's the eating.
Like universal forms eating?
Not necessarily, just going back into. So it's just another way you can say it was
eaten. Oh, like dust and dust.
Like his time was eaten up. Okay. You know, it's not that there's this big... He's running down the road. Yeah. Summary of Adhikarana 1. The Vishaya, that's what he's saying, the obscure meanings of words, that's how Upanishads work. So you don't try to take it specifically, you know, in the, how you say?
Literal.
Yeah, it means it's literal in what it means, but in the ordinary way of using it, the standard way of using it. We have to get used to that. Vishaya, the Katha Upanishad one, oh, we just said that. Shamshaya, here are the words odana, food, and upasechana, sauce, indicate an eater. Who is the eater? It is fire, the jiva, or the... Is it fire, the jiva, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Because right? They'll take fire as jiva. They won't take fire as the Supreme. You know, like with Indra. They take Indra as jiva, not as Indra as the Supreme. So it's going to go that way.
If we clear, like Vyasadev clears their doubts... Because we already discussed fire, we already discussed Indra, Manomai, but it means they don't accept it, they just go on? Or he just, you know.
In your own experience, if someone has a different opinion, no matter what you say, right?
Yeah, everybody goes on.
Yeah, so that's it. All, and that's people who occasionally think about it. Now, what about people who all they do is think about that? That is their sadhana. It's just mental mental speculation. So therefore, they're going to be the toughest to give this up.
Mm-hmm. Right. Moreover, they have references, you know, to the different
positions. Yeah, yeah. Yes, they'll say all these different things. Because otherwise, they're asking here, who is the eater? Is it fire? Is it the jiva? Or is it the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Right? So they'll...
So this would be the avoiding preaching to the faithless. So this would be the faithless who are going to give up their position.
Yeah. Means if they can catch it, then it's there. But if not, then no. It's not that if someone wants to know, then even if they're coming from that background, then they'll be affected. But if they don't want to be, then that kind of person, then you don't spend your time. Purva Paksha. The Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 1.4.6 declares, Agnir Anadha, fire is the eater. Therefore, fire is the eater in this passage. Or perhaps the jiva is the eater here because eating is an action, and the jiva performs actions, although the Supreme does not perform any actions. Because Brahma does no actions, the jiva is doing actions, so it could be there. But he take it as agnir, so therefore it's fire. Right? This is also confirmed by the Shruti Shastra, which describes an eater accompanied by a non-eater, who simply looks. Tayor Anya Papalam. The two friendly birds sit on a tree. Right now, the last one is to use that to defeat their point. Now they're using this to try to... Yeah, so it's just, you know...
How would this be logical? The jiva eats the jiva? I mean, the cannibals? What are they trying to prove?
Isn't that the standard saying? If you can't beat them, eat them?
I'm not sure if they use the same logic.
No? Wasn't that how your mom taught you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, see? No, because here it could be for, means depends upon the context in which you're taking. So, in other words, the eater here, they're taking it as that eating meaning enjoying the senses in and the sense objects. So in that way, then eating like that. So then they're saying it's the jiva because the other one's not, is just looking on. But if we take it as it's the Supreme, that means the cosmos comes out of, but the cosmos also goes back into him. Like that. You know, so they're dealing on a little bit more subtle platform. Like that. You can take it as the gross, the you know, the living entity is eating. But then you could also take it back subtle as fire. But they're saying it doesn't go in the direction of the Supreme because he does no action. But what the point is that if he's the source of creation, that means he's beyond creation. So the action he performs is not affected by the material world. So the action that they're worried about is not the action that he's doing. So, yeah. from all this, it may be understood that the eater here is the jiva, right? So Siddhanta. Srila Vyasadeva gives the proper understanding in the following sutra. Ata chara chara grahanat. The eater is Brahman because he takes the moving and non-moving as his food. Okay. Sutra 129. So now, this is 9 and 10, so two sutras. Ata chara chara grahanat. Ata, the eater. Chara, the moving. Achara, and the non-moving. Grahanat, because of taking. The Lord is the eater because he devours all moving and non-moving entities. Sutra Prakashika. The question as to whether or not the quote-unquote eater refers to Brahman is made complex by the fact that the Upanishads give seemingly conflicting messages. Some messages says that he eats. Others say he does not eat. Vyasa reveals that the eater is in fact the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that all contradictions are resolved through proper discrimination between mundane and spiritual. Right, so that's where you have to make the jiva himself, he does the mundane eating, but the Supreme Lord, he's only doing spiritual eating. Mm-hmm. It's like eating a bucket of halva. That's spiritual eating. Yes. Okay. The Lord partakes of transcendental eating. He does not eat the results of karma. Sri Govinda Bhasha, Vishaya. It is said in the Katha Upanishad, Yasya Brahma Sa Kshatram Cha Ubhe Bhavata Odana Mrityor Yasho Pase Chanam Ka Ita Veda Yatra Saha. Brahmanas and Kshatriyas are his food, and death is the topping sprinkled on the food. Who knows where this person dwells? Katha Upanishad 1:2:25. Yeah, it definitely takes the fun out of light, our concept of our sense of our situation and our prestige and everything like that. We just, yeah. Purvapaksha. Because the descriptive terms do not clearly specify any of the three, and because the nature of the questions and answers, fire seems to be the eater. Shuti says, Agnir Anadha. Fire eats the food. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 1:4:6. Or the eater is the jiva, since eating requires action, appropriate to the jiva and not to the Lord, who performs no action. Right? Because we're saying that the jiva performs action, and he's eating the fruits of the tree while the Paramatma as witness is sitting in the same tree but not eating the fruit. So he does no action. Right? Or the jiva is involved in karma, the Lord is not. So then they're saying, then you could say it's the jiva, because if there's an action of eating, that action means it must be jiva because the Lord performs no action. Right? So what's happening? They're not discriminating between spiritual and material action. Right? The Shruti indicates who eats and does not eat in the following. Tayor Anya Pipalam. Of the two, the jiva eats the fruit of the tree. Mundaka Upanishad 3:1:1. Therefore, the eater is the jiva. Right? So they've even dropped the point of the, of fire. Even though it uses the term fire. Like that. But even then, even if we do discuss fire, what about fire? They'll say that Agni is a jiva, so therefore it's still the jiva is eating. Right? Because the jivas perform action, the Lord doesn't. Siddhanta, ata chara chara grahanata. The Lord is the eater because he devours all moving and non-moving entities. The Lord is the eater. Why? Because he takes the moving and non-moving entities as his food. He accepts the whole universe, represented by brahmanas and kshatriyas, sprinkled with death as his food. So here's the whole universe. So the vaishyas and kshatriyas, shudras are also included, but it's you're taking that the whole community of living entities headed by brahmas and kshatriyas, because it's also including those who are non-moving. So it also, besides the shudras, you also get the trees and the grass and the butterflies and the rainbows and the whole thing. Right? Even the unicorns, right?
Wow.
Okay. Yes. No one except the Lord can devour the universe. The sprinkled sauce, Upa Se Chanam, causes one to eat other foods when a portion of it is eaten. The eater of the whole universe, sprinkled with death, can refer only to the destroyer of the universe. The Paramatma is well known for this. Though the scriptures say that the Lord does not eat, what is denied in such a statement is his accepting the results of the form of karma, because being unaffected by karma is his very nature. Therefore, it is correct to conclude that the Lord is the eater in the passage cited. Right? So what he eats is not the karma of the living entities. That stays with them, because that's also defined, is that the next body, that karma goes with them. Because if he ate that, they would go to the next body, transcendental. Right, but that stays. So when it says he does not eat, it means he does not partake in the karma of the living entities. It's not that he doesn't have action. He's not entangled or in any way affected by the actions and reactions, right? Either the living entities or his own.
Bhagavad,
yes.
He can you explain this line?
About the sprinkling with the death, and that makes you eat other things.
But it says eating portion of it, and then someone else eats it, or
no? It says no. Okay, the sprinkled sauce upa se chanam causes one to eat other foods when a portion of it is eaten.
Okay, I understand.
You understand when the sauce is there, you taste the sauce. Then you know you eat everything goes along with the sauce, what the sauce is poured on. You know, that's it. If you have some preparation, you don't know what it is, you don't dive right in. You take the sauce. Right? And the sauce is good, you eat the rest of it. So death affects everything, so therefore then everything gets eaten. Does that make sense? So everything being destroyed means the death of everything, then that it all goes back into the Lord. So even if we take it, our own particular nature that we have, the subtle and gross nature that we've acquired, you know, for this lifetime, all the elements of that will go back into the universal form, right? And then next life we'll have another gross, we'll have the same subtle body, but because it has transformed by our use of it, therefore now it takes on other qualities of the universal form, therefore you'll get a different body. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So in any case, it does go all back to the Lord. But the point is that death, that it goes back to the Lord. Right? So it's only when the universe finishes, it goes back to Him. You know, or the individuals within, when they finish, it goes back to Him. So it's just meaning, and here he's saying eating, Prabhupada uses the term devouring. You know, because then you take on more of a, you know, everything's being, you know, going back to the Lord. Eating, then we're trying, you know, sitting here and picking up.
Yeah.
Less.
Complete recycle.
Yeah. Yeah. That means the universe is actually totally recyclable and sustainable.
But we never get secondhand bodies?
Never get secondhand bodies. So you're worried about that?
I am.
Sometimes
this little
like
finger here, this doesn't seem to be fresh. No, because it's a concept.
Secondhand?
The whole thing. It's the concept is secondhand. That means chewing the chewed. Right here, we're chewing the chewed. So even we're enjoying sense gratification of situations, it's chewing the chewed. So again, eating is used as the example. Right, you know, because eating is something everybody relates to. Every living entity eats in some way, so it's something, you know, whether they sleep or not, or you know, something like that. But eating, they can all relate to. Right? So, the concept of what it is we want to enjoy, that concept is a primordial concept, and so then as we take on that particular mentality, then we get that particular situations and results in that. And those have all been used before. The specific combination may be particularly unique at the moment, but it's just how you put it together. You know, it's like in a kaleidoscope. You turn the kaleidoscope, it's constantly making different shapes. But what is it made out of? The same things. You know what I'm saying? So something may be different. So everything's the same, but, you know, we have the mole over here instead of, you know, somewhere else. Right? Even just as a point, just as a sight, and we won't entertain any discussions after this point, is that moles, depending where you have them, they always come in three places. They're on, neck and above, they're on the torso, and then they're on the lower leg if you have. So depending where one is, you can say where the other two are. So that's why then astronomers and then they see a mole and they can say, oh, you have a mole here and here. And you go, wow, how does he eat like that? As Shastra says. Like that. It's just one of the things. Yeah. Okay. Better not be a question about the moles.
Because this particular adhikaran is establishing that the Lord is the eater, that means indicating that He is the material cause.
No, because what's being wound up is the material cause. He's the efficient cause, because it goes back to the efficient. So the efficient is eating the material. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Bhagavatam reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.11.24. O best of brahmanas, he alone is the self-luminous, original source of the Vedas, perfect and complete in his own glory. By his material energy, he creates, destroys, and maintains the entire universe. Because he is the performer of various material functions. Right, it's all within material. It means the material energy is what's transforming. But he is the potency, he is the powerhouse behind that. So even though the creation, maintenance, and destruction will be done by the material energy, he is the source of that. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Because he is the performer of various material functions, he is sometimes described as materially divided. Yet he always remains transcendentally situated in pure knowledge. Those who are dedicated to him in devotion can realize him to be their true soul. So, many times you see these verses that are quoted in here. They're from 11th and 12th canto. Mm-hmm. Right? So then, you can understand is that all these technical points are all included there. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.11.18. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his inconceivable supreme energy, time, causes the interaction of the three modes of material nature. And thus, varieties of energy become manifest. It appears that he is acting, but he is not the actor. He is killing, but he is not the killer. Thus, it is understood that only by his inconceivable power is everything happening. Footnote 28. In his purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada describes how Lord Chaitanya's Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy is the perfect way of understanding such inconceivable subjects. The word durvibhavya means inconceivable by our tiny brain. And vibhakta viryaha means divided in varieties of potencies. This is the right explanation of the display of creative energies in the material world. It is incorrect to argue, however, that because energy issues from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the actor. In the previous verse, the word nimitta matram indicates that the Supreme Lord is completely aloof from the action and reaction of this material world. How is everything being done? The word inconceivable has been used. It is not within the power of one's small brain to comprehend. Unless one accepts the inconceivable power and energy of the Lord, one cannot make any progress. The forces which act are certainly set up by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is always aloof from their action and reaction. The varieties of energies produced by the interaction of material nature produce the varieties of species of life and their resultant happiness and unhappiness. Right, so he sets up the potencies, and he is the source of those potencies, or the maintenance of those potencies, but the potencies themselves are what are transforming and creating and, you know, maintaining and destroying everything. Right? So that puts him beyond. So that's why he's the efficient, and then there's the material cause. So the material is what makes everything happen. Right? And then he, as the original, then it's there. So there, you know, in the four levels of cause, he's the original cause. Then there's his internal potency and his external potency, or yoga maya and maha maya. Right? And then the jiva is there as an instrument. You know, so because he thinks he's part of it, therefore he gets the karma. But if he thinks I'm servant of the Lord, then he's working under internal potency, then he's not anymore the cause. But because he took part in that service, he gets that good devotional result. Right?
Is the definition of original and efficient cause the same thing, or two different things?
It depends how you're just where you're placing it. Mm. But in this case, you would say original and efficient would be the same. Yeah. Yeah. If you're using all four.
Sure.
You know, yeah. Because in other words, the two and the four. In other words, you have the original is him. Then we say the material means what's going on here. Yeah. But how does that function? It functions on his desire. So there's the primary. So we would count the formal with him. Right? Because he, on his own, you can't separate him and his energy. So that means him and his internal potency are there together. So then we mean the material world's doing, and the jiva goes along for the ride.
Yes.
He thinks he's the one that's causing it. And because he thinks he is, that's why he gets the reaction.
As the present.
Yes, yes, the present, as the present. Yes.
In this causation, the Lord is the original cause, Maya is the material cause.
Yes.
Yoga Maya
is because the Lord's always with his internal potency. So it's then with his internal potency, then that's the, what do you call it? The
efficient cause?
No, not the, you would say is the prototype of what the material cause is doing. Right? In other words, the material cause is manifesting those particular abilities or manifestations of cause. It means the material energy creates the cat. But where does that concept of cat come from? That comes from the formal cause, the internal potency. So that's with him. So when you talk about him, you mean him and his internal potency.
Because you mentioned four.
Yes, but that's what I'm saying, but that you put those together. So when in other words, when you're saying four, you have it divided into two, right? The spiritual and the material, right? Spiritual is the original cause and formal cause.
Okay, and, material.
And the material is the jiva and the material energy, right? So then when you just say it as two, you mean the Lord and you mean the material energy, right? So in other words, on both of them, the other two are just there as part of the scene. So the jiva is just part of the scene. So, yeah, so only in, what was his name? Aristotle, then, he puts everything within what we'd call the material cause. You know, so everything goes there. So the jiva becomes the, what do you call it? He's the one who makes the endeavor, and he's the purpose. He has a purpose behind his endeavor. And then you have the material energy itself, and then the forms in which it is and can transform to. Right? You know, so they, even though it's very nicely done, he doesn't actually technically get beyond the mundane. Okay, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds, the Lord is the material cause, upadana karana, and the indirect cause, nimitta karana. Right, so here indirect is also efficient. But here you're talking about efficient meaning he is the potent person, and indirect meaning that he's not actually connected. You know, so depending on which element you want to bring out, quality, then you use a different term. Mm-hmm. Since he is not different from his energies of the gunas, time, and the jiva, he is the non-doer since these items are not the Lord's sarup. Right? So they're his energy. So in that way he's non-different, and then you can say that he is the one that's doing. He is the cause. But at the same time, since they're not his sarup, they're different. So that's the whole point, is he is everything. But then there's his sarup, which is then beyond all that. It's the source of all that, but it's still beyond. As the source, it has to be beyond. So for things to be created, there must be a creator. So that means what's created is non-different from the creator, but at the same time, it's different from the form of the creator.
When we say the form of the creator, we mean Bhagavan?
Yes. Because that's his surup. Mm-hmm. Like that. Thus, he kills and is not the killer. Why does he create the universe? Why does he not continually create the universe and not have destruction? Why does he make inequality in the universe? To dismiss such questions, it is said that he is inconceivable, since he is the powerful Lord, Vibhum Naha. Oh, that's a boom that's from. This universe is a manifestation of his power. Sardartha Darshani 4.11.18. Right. So then it goes back to, he wants to bring the living entities back to this spiritual world, but the living entities want to control and enjoy here. So therefore, as they control and enjoy, that's how they're implicated. But at the same time, it's originally for taking them back to Godhead. So that's the inconceivable position. Okay. Sutra 210. Prakaranach cha. Prakaranat, because of the context, cha also. The eater refers to the Lord because the Lord is the subject. Sutra Prakashika. One way to ascertain the meaning of the eater passage is to look at the neighboring statements. The preceding section of Katha Upanishad contains a description which unmistakably matches the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This lends credence to the interpretation that the eater is in fact Brahman and not fire or the jiva. Sri Govinda Bhashya. In the same section of Katha Upanishad, it is said, Anor Aniyan Mahato Mahiyan. The Lord is smaller than the small and greater than the great. Katha Upanishad 1:2:20. This indicates that the Lord is the topic of discussion. The word cha indicates that Smriti confirms this. Atasi lokasya chara charasya. You are the eater of all moving and non-moving beings. Footnote 29. Pitasi lokasya chara charasya. You are the father of all moving and non-moving beings in the worlds. Occurs in Bhagavad Gita 11:43, and in that chapter, Krishna is described as devourer of the worlds. Right, so you see, even the Smriti is dealing with the same concepts. It'll just be put together, you know, in different verses, in a different, more, you know, in a particular, in the classical poetic way rather than the Vedic poetic. Right. So, in other words, a poetry of the mind instead of poetry of the intellect. Right. Or poetry of the emotion, like say, then poetry of the discrimination. That would probably make them both sound better.
Yes.
Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:9:34, the Devatas said, O Lord, you need no support, and although you have no material body, you do not need cooperation from us, since you are the cause of the cosmic manifestation, and you supply its material ingredients without being transformed. You create, maintain, and annihilate this cosmic manifestation by yourself. Nevertheless, although you appear engaged in material activity, you are transcendental to all material qualities. Nevertheless, although you appear engaged in material activity, you are transcendental to all material qualities. Consequently, these transcendental activities of yours are extremely difficult to...
That should be understand and then footnote 30. Mm-hmm.
So it's not that we have to say understand louder or something.
Yeah. Very loud and then with a question. Like, understand?
Okay, you're extremely difficult to understand.
Yeah, the louder
okay.
mind.
Okay. Yeah.
We're good. We're good. To make sure nobody has
if it
a question.
Were in all caps, that would be really, really.
Yeah, yeah, then it would be really. Yeah. Okay, so that's supposed to say footnote 30 there.
I imagine.
Okay, because otherwise there is no other.
Exactly.
And that's the end of the page.
Right.
Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakra also describes the difficulty Mayavadis have in reconciling the Lord's transcendental form with the fact that he is all-pervading and everywhere simultaneously. So that's the problem. He has a form, but he's all-pervading. They can't understand this. That's their problem, right? Lack of devotion, then it's a problem. Though you are beyond the gunas, Atmarama, enjoying eternally in Vaikuntha, you also play in the material realm by carrying out creation and destruction. By methods difficult for us to understand, that you engage in playing seems to be Eva, difficult to understand. It is easy to understand for intelligent devotees, but difficult to understand for others. Why? You have no shelter and have no bodily actions. But Shruti says that the Creator has a form with 1,000 heads. You give no regard to assistance offered by us, the presiding deities of the hand and the other sense organs. Though you are the material cause of the universe, Atmana, you are without transformation. If one accepts vivartavad, then it is not astonishing that you are without transformation, since the transformations are illusory. But it's astonishing if one does not accept vivartavada. Gajendra says, Namo namaste kila karanaya nishkaranaya karanayad bhuta karanaya. My Lord, you are the cause of all causes, but you have no cause. Therefore, you are the astonishing cause of everything. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. This means that you are astonishing as the cause because you are without transformation, though you are the material cause, right? So, we do anything, there's transformation. But the Lord does things, he doesn't transform. So that's the thing, he transforms everything, but he himself does not become transformed. That's the astonishing point. Right? If we only look at he doesn't become transformed, that's not astonishing, because we're talking about the Supreme Brahman, so naturally it's changeless. But when you talk about that he deals with the material energy, and he doesn't become transformed, now that's then special, because for us, we become entangled. Because the problem of illusion is our problem, not Krishna's problem. Right? We're the ones that are trying to become Brahman. Brahman doesn't have to try to become Brahman. Brahman's already Brahman. This means that you are astonishing as the cause because you are without transformation, though you are the material cause. Though you are without gunas, you create the universe with gunas. A potter with gunas, taking support of a place, using his body and taking assistance, creates a pot with gunas by transformation of clay and other materials. But it is difficult to understand how you, without gunas, without support, without assistance, and without a material body, create the universe. That's the astonishing point. So that's why we want to use our intelligence to understand the Lord, but since the Lord is beyond intelligence, how is that possible? That's the whole thing. So that's why then intellectually trying to understand the Supreme has its limits. Right? We use intellect, but it's only up to the point that we accept that there is something beyond. When we accept that the intelligence is limited, and therefore we can only understand the Supreme by surrendering to the Supreme, then at that point you can understand. But if we think, no, by my intelligence I can understand everything, then we will not understand whatever it is that we're trying to understand. It will be limited. I mean, we can understand up to a point, but what's beyond that, the original and formal cause, that we can't understand. Right? We can, like Aristotle, we can understand within the material world. This person's there, why do they want to do it, what's the reasons, what do you have, what those forms, what can they transform into, by which endeavor, that we can understand. But to understand what's beyond that, we can't, unless we acknowledge that there is something beyond. So, yeah? Okay. Yeah, that seems to work out. Oh! Wow! Now I see what you mean. I was thinking, that would just go to the next one. Wow. Okay. So that means that tomorrow we'll have fresh.
We hope. There is hope.
Huh? There is hope.
There is. Okay. There's always hope.
There's always hope. Okay.
Against hope.
Hope against hope, right? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarva Veda Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.